This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. My name is Bo Bennett, and welcome once again to the 2017 International Convention Preview Podcast. This is part two, where we speak with four presenters about their sessions at this year's International Convention coming up on August 23rd through August 26th in Vancouver, British Columbia at the Convention Center. Today we're going to be speaking with Kendra Hall, Muhammad Ali Shukri, Mark Hunter, and David Dai. And as usual, I will be joined by my esteemed co-hosts, Ryan Levesque and Greg Gazin. Stick around, folks. It'll be a lot of fun and educational.
Award-winning columnist and author Kendra Hall is our next guest. Kendra is presenting The Irresistible Power of Strategic Storytelling at the International Convention on Thursday, August 24th, 9 a.m. Kendra Hall, welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast.
Welcome, Kendra.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here, guys.
Kendra, why stories?
That's a big question, isn't it? I think anytime we speak, we give a presentation, we get up in front of the room. I don't know about you, but my goal is always not necessarily about the couple minutes that I get right there in front of the audience, but wanting to stay with them. Because why go through all of the nerves, all of the preparation, all of the, you know, the stuff that goes through our heads if it's only going to be there for that one moment in time? And so with that in mind, I think back to the first speaker, the first person I really remember hearing speak. I was 17 years old, a senior in high school, and I was at a leadership conference. And this gentleman took the stage. He was the keynote speaker for the day. And I remember him talking. He was talking about leadership. And really, we've all heard about leadership. You know, he wasn't saying anything new or revolutionary. But I remember that he told a story about standing in a high school gymnasium and watching as 300 kids tried to cram through one door. You know how that goes, right? 300 kids trying to cram through one open door. And then he watched as one, you know, normal teenager stepped out of the herd of his friends and opened a second door, and then a third, and then a fourth, until the whole gymnasium filled with kids. And then the gentleman, the speaker, looked at us and said, "That's the kind of leader I want you to be. I want you to be the kind of leader who opens doors no one else even sees are there." Now, that story is very small, short, and I heard it 20 years ago. So, you know, when you talk about giving a presentation or, again, getting up in front of a room, I think we can all agree that we don't want it just to be in that one moment. We want it to last for decades if possible. And stories are the way that we do that.
Hey, Ryan, you see what Kendra did there? You asked her a question about a story, and she told you a story of a guy telling a story. Very, very meta. Yeah.
Very meta. I was hoping you would catch on to it. I'm glad to see that I'm dealing with experts here. Nice work.
Cool. So that's a little bit about how or why stories are so powerful. Can you touch on, as your session title goes, the irresistible power of strategic storytelling? Where does the strategic piece come in here?
Well, certainly. I mean, I think anybody, as humans, we are, and you'll hear this a lot, we are wired for stories. We like hearing stories. And certainly we share stories, you know, socially, we share them casually, we share them, you know, over social media, we share them with our spouses at the end of the long day. But storytelling goes on to an additional level when you have a message to deliver, when you have a point that you want to make, and choosing the right story and telling it in the appropriate way and actually telling the story. There's strategy to that. And that is, that'll be one of the things that I touch on in that presentation, because the story is going to make them, your audience, do something, right? And you want to make sure it's the right thing. So that's where the strategy comes in.
Cool. So I'm actually crafting a story right now, Kendra. I was working on it last night. And I know your session promises to help audience members discover the biggest storytelling mistakes and how to avoid them. And with my, not only the rest of our audience, but of course, it's always all about me. So with my particular story in mind as the bonus here for myself, could you share with us what is one of the biggest storytelling mistakes and how can we avoid it?
Of course. So there's a couple of really big ones, and I don't want to spoil the presentation, but one of the things as you are in the middle of crafting a story is, I think one of the big, and I'm trying to figure out how to say this that doesn't give it all away. One of the big mistakes that you're likely making right now is in building the stakes of the story and spending the right amount of time in the right way with the right pieces of story to really let the audience settle in and care about the story as a whole. And so often we think that making them care has to do with one point in the story, when really it has to do with an entirely different portion of the story. And that's usually the portion that people leave out. So that's all I'm going to give you for that. But there's definitely a shift in where we focus our attention in the story, the development of the story, that I'm hoping I will be able to help everyone in the room make when we are there together in August.
Hey, Ryan, if you want the rest, you got to pay.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I know.
Get on that plane to Vancouver.
Appropriately vague, right?
You want the milk, you got to buy the cow.
Exactly.
So, Kendra, as you envision the session that you're going to conduct, that sounds very formal, doesn't it? in Vancouver, how what's the presentation style going to be like?
Yeah. Well, so it is, I'll be taking more of a keynote approach from the outside looking in. So if you were to look at it, if you were to watch it on video, you would say, oh, okay, so there's a presenter on stage teaching an audience who's sitting in the room. But what I've found happens is because storytelling is such an intimate topic, right? Like we each feel very personally and experience in very unique ways our stories. It's though it will be me talking, there is a lot of internal interactive work that happens. I recently just finished a presentation earlier this week. And one of the things, you know, after it was done, I had the great fortune of not having to fly out of town right away, so I could stick around and kind of hear what the response was, which I think is really important, just as a note, to hear what the response was so you can hone your craft even more. But the thing that fascinated me was with each person I talked to, everyone came away with a slightly different aha moment. And I know that sounds trite, but with a slightly different change that they wanted to make in the way that they use their stories. And so it was exciting for me to hear that. And I think really valuable for the people in the room. So everybody gets a chance to discover something new on their own, though it's me guiding the, what was the formal word you said? Conducting. That's what it is. I'm conducting your story imaginations.
I like it. And Kendra, I didn't ask you about this, but can you tell us, what's your background in storytelling? Obviously, you mentioned your first sort of big exposure to it at 17 years old, but how did you personally get involved with telling stories and sharing stories?
Yeah, well, it's funny. It's funny that you ask that, because I know that storytelling, especially right now, has become a bit of a buzzword, right? A lot of people are talking about it. A lot of people are trying to figure it out. And I accidentally, this has been decades in the making. I told my first story actually when I was 11. It was an assignment for fifth grade. And it was one of those things where suddenly I found the thing I was meant to do. Now, it's hard to figure out what to do with the fact that what you can do is tell stories. You know, I recently heard Steve Harvey say that he had this moment when he realized what he can do is be funny. Like, bravo to Steve Harvey for making a career out of that, right? So I was 11 when I told my first story. I was on the speech team where I competed telling stories through high school. I entered a national storytelling competition. I told at national festivals. So my whole world was stories, and not with an agenda, not in business, just the art of the story and the enjoyment of the story. And so from 11 years old, that was my fascination. That became my study, my future, though I didn't know it at the time. And then as I got older, of course, I was interested in business. I wanted to see how you can make things work. And it was kind of the coming together of those two things. And here I am now.
All right, Kendra, this was wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing this with us. I think it's a great session that people should be very excited to hear and watch and experience. Thank you so much again for being with us. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. It's fun. I can't wait to be there in August.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye, Kendra.
Bye now.
Our next guest is Mohammed Ali Shukri, and he is presenting a session at the International Convention called Life in Your Speech. It's scheduled for Friday, August 25th at 10:15 a.m. Corporate trainer Mohammed Ali Shukri joining us from Bahrain. Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome.
Thank you, Ryan and Greg. Great to be with you.
Pleasure to have you with us. So Mohammed, yes. Life in Your Speech. Tell us, what is that all about?
I couldn't wake up to this title until in 2006, which was my first year to participate in the contests and the year which I reached to the finals for the first time. But in the middle, I was rehearsing in one of the clubs, and there comes a coach, one of my coaches, and he said, Mohammed, you did a great job tonight, except for one thing. There was no life in your speech. And hence, all the direction of my public speaking has changed forever. Everything I learned, everything I started learning or unlearning or relearning again, depended on where is the life in your speech. I subjected it to studies, tests, and tries, and finally I came up with this book and keynote and model, The Life in Your Speech.
Before you tell us a little more about it, I'm just very curious. What went through your mind when they told you there's no life in your speech? Because, you know, for me, I probably would have been devastated.
I mean, yes, you'll see, there the audience will see the whole impact that happened to me and the jaw drop, because everyone else saw the speech complete, except for my very wise coach, who saw that it lacked life. And he was right. Everything in your speech, you will prepare everything in your speech except this element, the life in your speech. And it's very intangible, but it touches upon everything tangible in your performance. So my job is to get this out and make it a speech which is live. So speaking to a live audience doesn't mean you are alive when you are speaking. So that's in a nutshell.
So what are some of the earmarks of a speech that is alive as opposed to dead? I mean, I think just hearing that expression, there was no life in your speech, that sounds like, well, you know, your energy was low. There wasn't much vocal variety. You were kind of flat, not really emotional. But I assume that you had all of those fundamentals down by far, and that your mentor was going for something deeper than that in his criticism.
Exactly, Ryan. Ryan, you're absolutely right, because I told him I got everything correct. I didn't forget a line, and every nut and bolt in the speech was okay. My voice, I'm very good in my voice, my movements. I even had a standing ovation. So what are you talking about? And then slowly he took me to the process, and the shock of my life couldn't be, it wasn't easy, and it wasn't direct. So it's not really about the voice. It's something really beneath the surface. It's like you seeing a speaker who is talking about something very technical, dead, like machines, like computers, like car engines, all right? And yet you see him full of life. The speech, the ideas are gushing out of his body, out of his voice. And yet you watch another speaker who's very spiritual, and he's talking about a spiritual subject. It should be full of life, and yet you feel you are deadened to that speech. So it's really not the subject. It's really not how you project it, but is there real life in it? Otherwise, some mentors, coaches will come to say, you need to inject more life. And I say to them, if the speech is dead already, it doesn't matter whatever you inject.
Right. Just injecting embalming fluid into a cadaver.
I was just thinking, as you were speaking, I was thinking of the old story about, you know, making an apple pie. Everybody has the same ingredients, but yet they come out with different pies. Some pies will come out nice, some pies will come out tasteless, or maybe even using a bread analogy, right? We're all baking the same bread, but yet some bread just comes out flat. Is that sort of what you're going at?
Well, I'm glad you said that, Greg, the different ingredients. You know, and in my area, when the contest season happens, and when we reach to the division and district, we invite champions to our area, and they speak to our Toastmasters, and they give them models, and every champion gives a different model, but all of them are successful to them. So it a bit confuses the speakers and the Toastmasters. However, the speech in your life is not a new model. It's a model derived from your own life. So the way you live is the way you speak. There is no other permanent guaranteed model than the way you live. You don't even have to remember my model. I'm just going to deassemble it for you, analyze it for you, and you can put it all back together again. And whenever you forget, you just remember how you live every day, every moment. That is how you speak on the stage. And you're going to be shocked, because we speakers tend to do exactly the opposite. Exactly the opposite when we are on stage. So hence the speech in your life.
So you're going to tell us what to do, but not what to do.
Yeah, it's always like this, isn't it?
Mohammed, what do you expect the audience at the international convention who attends your workshop, how are they going to be different as speakers and perhaps as human beings as a result of attending your session?
I'll pick from the word different, Ryan. That's my promise to every speaker, because what I'm going to offer is not something I discovered and I'm going to deliver. No. In 2006, I discovered this, but I was living it way back. I was applying something all the time. And probably people will say it in another word. It's you speak from the heart, okay? But exactly, it's not that. It's something deeper. It's life itself. So what I'm going to promise them that when you apply this model, and we did apply it for 2 years, and contestants found a huge difference on themselves, first of all, and then on the audience, and then on the results of the judging sheet, they got advanced. This is what I promise. You will be different from everyone else. So nobody will listen to you and say, I think I heard that speech somewhere before. No way anyone is gonna say that to you. So you will be singled out easily, because your life has a unique DNA and you're not using it, a unique fabric. So bring it on the stage. We don't bring it on the stage. We are always programmed with previous champions, previous or current trends. Trends are killing us in a lot of ways. But I want everyone to know that she is a speaker already, because you have a life. Just bring it on the stage. It's going to be very easy from now onwards.
Yeah, I like the DNA analogy. It makes it fairly unique. In the session listing, Muhammad, it says that you'll be teaching people three signs that you found a topic to bring life to you in your speech, three sins to avoid, three stages. So you have a lot of things in threes. Perhaps you can share with us maybe one sign that we found a topic that brings life to us in our speech.
Okay. It again has to do with the 2 years I participated, 2006 to Washington and 2007 in Arizona. And I noticed in all the speeches that there was a point in my story where I struggle. I don't want to say this. It's a bit embarrassing or things like that. Or the whole story, I don't want to share. No, I don't want to share this. This is uncomfortable to share. But I noticed when I share the very rarely shared topics or stories or aspects of my life, I noticed that they are the ones which land the most with the audience. In other words, the darker and daring it becomes for you to disclose that part of your life, the more it relates to the audience. And that's what I noticed. A lot of speakers say only what is safe. So one of the signs is dig deeper and deeper, because just below the surface, you can find a good story, but a great story really is deeper than that. It goes to the emotions and the very root causes of what's happening in your life. So if you are comfortable with the speech, that's not a good sign. If you are comfortable to say the story, that's not a good sign. If you are uncomfortable saying things that are very deep, then you have reached somewhere others didn't reach. And that's why they see you different. And they say, oh my God, you speak for us. That's exactly what happened in my life. But it's because you decided to disclose things that others wouldn't. So being uncomfortable is one of the signs. Good signs, by the way.
So it sounds like the session is appropriately titled Life in Your Speech, because that is what life is all about. So if you want to hear more and you want to hear the full session that Muhammad Ali Shukri is putting on, you can attend the Toastmasters International Convention in beautiful Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And Muhammad's session will be on Friday, August the 25th, from 10:15 to 11:15 a.m. Muhammad Ali Shukri, thank you so much for being on the show. And we look forward to your session in Vancouver.
Thank you, Muhammad.
It was a pleasure, guys. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Ryan.
It is my pleasure to welcome to the show the 2009 World Champion of Public Speaking, Distinguished Toastmaster Mark Hunter. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Ryan. A pleasure to be here.
Mark, we have the pleasure of chatting today about two of the workshops that you'll be presenting at the International Convention. The first is on Wednesday, August 23rd from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. It's a leadership workshop called PETS, which I understand is an acronym for the President-Elect Training Sessions. And the second workshop is The Voice of the Bonsai, a conversation on leadership, Thursday, August 24th from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. But let's start talking about the leadership workshop, PETS. I love the acronym. To start off, I know this is a program that was developed in District 69. Can you share a little bit of background of what the PETS workshop is all about?
My pleasure, Ryan. In District 69, we came to understand that we, in our club officer training, we did the knowledge aspect of leadership within the Toastmasters organization with regard to clubs very well. So we trained our executive officers in their role, basically in what they had to do and what they had to know. What was missing, we believed, was the skill set that underpinned the knowledge of what it is to be a leader in Toastmasters. So we created PETS, this President-Elect Training Session program, to upskill our incoming executives. So we'd run this particular program at the end of the Toastmasters year for the incoming executives so that they were ready to pick up their responsibilities and make their leadership more effective. So we identified a number of leadership skills that we thought were needed by the club executives, and we created this 6-hour workshop that we've been running now for a number of years. So what I want to do in Vancouver is to share the development of the program, why basically what we're talking about now, and then share with the participants the 12 units that we take the executive or the leaders through. Obviously, in an hour, I'm not going to be able to package the whole program, but what I'm going to do is share the elements of a PETS program and then pick some of the elements for a little elaboration. I'll also leave on the conference website some papers that explain in detail the 4 elements that I'm going to cover.
Can you share with us a little bit about how the program's been received in District 69 and how it's transformed leadership, and in other words, the impact that it's had?
The feedback, and we get feedback after each session, and the feedback we get is extremely positive from the participants. So how it's been received is in a positive manner, so much so that we extended the invitation to all Toastmasters in the clubs who wanted to develop their leadership skills. We all know that what we do in our organization is create a change with an individual that is imminently transferable to outside Toastmasters leadership roles. So one of the changes that we have undertaken is to extend it just beyond the key leaders in each club. So well received. Some of it is quite remarkable reception. I mean, I'm a moderate realist, so there are some things that work for others, work for some people better than others. But I believe that every participant is able to take something away from the PETS program that they can implement as a leader. The other change is that we've split it into two. Because it's such a big program, we have a set of modules that we do at the beginning of the Toastmasters year, and then we have another set, the second set that we implement or deliver at the beginning of the calendar year, so around January, February, which includes tools that leaders can use to reflect on their practice.
Cool. Now, what I can see, I love how you've opened this up to all of the members of the district if they so choose. But what I can see this doing for a district is building bench strength for future leadership. So even if someone's not ready to take on a particular district or club officer role today, it's at least giving them that foundation of, I guess, leadership theory and practical skills that they can be executing right at the club level as a member, and then bring it into a leadership role, hopefully at some point. Was that sort of some of the thinking that went into opening it up more broadly?
Yes, Ryan, it was. It was about building capacity for the future and acknowledging, as I said earlier, the fact that the leadership skills that we are developing and sharing are imminently transferable to outside the organization. So we build capacity within our organization. And District 69 is quite an interesting district. We cover Queensland, Northern Territory, and including Papua New Guinea. So we've got a very large district. So it means that we've had a number of trainers. We've got a number of trainers. Some of those were, or most of them are, ones that developed the program in the first instance. And we have pairs of trainers that go around the district delivering these programs to each division. So you're right, it builds capacity in individuals for the future, but also acknowledges the fact that as emerging leaders, as many of our executive members are in district and club, it builds their confidence and awareness of what it is to be a leader.
Super. So Mark, you mentioned there are 12 units that are part of the entire program. But I know you're not going to be able, as you said, to drill into each of those units in a one-hour workshop at the International Convention. But what are the areas that you're going to try to focus on at the International Convention in terms of, I guess, presenting the leadership skills and imbuing some of those leadership skills to those who are in the audience?
Okay, so there are four elements. The first one is looking at the issue of individual and organizational purpose and how important it is to understand both, that there, each individual who comes to our organization or any organization for that matter does so for a purpose. And it's about taking steps to understand that and also how that links to organizational purpose based on the principle that when someone joins an organization for an individual purpose and that purpose is in harmony with the organizational purpose, then there's the possibility of a really good outcome. So there's that one. We focused right at the beginning, and we've developed this a little more, the concept of leadership awareness. So what we do is we share a number of tools or a number of aspects of leadership basically tools that leaders can use to reflect on their own leadership, gaining data from the team that they're leading or the team within which they're operating. The third one is about assertive conversations. And certainly as a school principal of many years, I would have loved this skill way back 30, 40 years ago, which is about being assertive without being aggressive. And it's a very simple tool. Some members or many members may even already know of this particular tool or strategy. So it's about sharing that and its importance. And the other thing that we've added recently that I'm sharing is the concept of leading introverts and extroverts and what that means for leaders. So we tackle that, or I'll be tackling that briefly from the individual leader's perspective, whether they are or feel that they're an introvert or an extrovert. And in the literature, we now have a third group, which is the ambivert. So it's not only about themselves as an individual in that context, but it's also about them leading introverts and extroverts. And that level of awareness in a leader can maximize the outcomes of the team.
Wow, this sounds like a really fantastic program that you guys have in your district. What is the purpose in your mind of bringing this to the International Convention? Are you hoping to inspire other districts to follow your lead with this program or develop something of their own? What is it that you hope attendees of this workshop will take away?
It's an interesting situation in which we find ourselves with pathways developing, and the analysis of pathways indicates that some of our program that we've designed will be acknowledged or noted or interacted with in the Pathways program. So the purpose is to let attendees know that the program is there, how in the future or this would look. I'm not sure whether or not Toastmasters picks it up as a unit or a program that can be implemented across the globe. It could be a possibility. So whilst the 1 hour is not going to upskill, 1 hour workshop is not going to upskill anyone to any degree at all, it's really awareness raising. So I think it will be testing the water to see whether or not attendees see the program being of value, and then what are the next steps to bring it to a reality in the districts that might want to have it.
Well, I suspect that if the attendees are anything like me, they will be envious that such a program exists in your district. It does sound great. So let us switch to your other workshop, the one on Thursday, August 24th at 8 a.m. in the morning, also tied to leadership, but I suspect a much different workshop, The Voice of the Bonsai, a conversation on leadership. I got to tell you, Mark, it sounds quite esoteric. Tell me, what is The Voice of the Bonsai all about?
Ryan, I have about 30 trees of my own that I've been tending for 20 odd years. And the relationship between the bonsai person and the trees is quite unique. And it was on that journey that I thought, well, there's more to this than first meets the eye. So what I've done is I've looked at the relationship between the bonsai master, and let me tell you right from the start that I'm not a bonsai master. I think that's a journey that takes several hundred years of generational input. But the relationship between the bonsai master and his or her trees is quite unique, and there are a number of lessons on life and love and leadership that come from that relationship. And what I've done is distilled some of those, and it's quite a different piece. I mean, the workshop is a workshop, and it'll be sharing of information. This will be a quiet piece where I want people to reflect on some of the elements of the lessons that come from this relationship. And if need be, if desired, then they can incorporate them into their own leadership. I mean, we all have a past. We all have a leadership past that some might call a leadership narrative that's built on our experiences as a leader. So what I want people to do is to be comfortable enough to let that leadership past just sit there and be present as I actually have or share three conversations between the tree and the bonsai master. And from those three conversations, I'm going to draw out some leadership thinking that I believe is relevant and appropriate to both the Toastmasters, well, both Toastmasters and those who hold leadership positions in other organizations. So it's different. It's thought-provoking, I hope. It's got some ideas that I believe some people will find challenging, but I'm asking people just to be present, trusting in the fact that in the future, in their leadership journey, that if they need a concept that I'm sharing, and this goes for all the presenters at the convention, you know, the attendees are going to be exposed to a whole lot of thinking and different ideas. And it's good for people to come with an open mind that they can leave their leadership narrative or the speaking narrative behind, just be present with the presenter and trust in the fact that should they need the idea that's being shared, that it'll come to the fore of their mind and they will be able to use it.
Super. So to be clear, I assume you wouldn't mind if people left the convention and went home and started experimenting with bonsai trees, but that's not the point here, to turn us all into leaders by turning us into bonsai masters.
No, not at all. Although it is a remarkable hobby, mm-hmm. For those who pick it up, and it's a hobby that is not physically demanding, but one of the primary benefits of having bonsais is that you've got very little to weed.
Okay.
You don't have a garden to weed, but you have these little pots in which you create these remarkable trees. So yes, I'm not trying to convince people to become bonsai masters or enthusiasts, rather get them to think about the relationship between the bonsai master, who is in this metaphor the leader, and the bonsai itself, which in the metaphor is the team member being led.
Right. Well, Mark, I'm going to put my ignorance on display a little bit here and trust that many in our audience are not as ignorant as I am on this topic. But when I think of bonsai trees, I think of a movie here in the United States in the 80s called The Karate Kid, which I trust you've probably heard of. And the martial arts master, Mr. Miyagi, who worked with young Danielson to teach him karate. Yes. So given that my understanding of the bonsai master and the tree is so rudimentary and probably stereotypical and everything else, can you give me a little bit more of an authentic idea of what is the whole concept of bonsai trees? You've touched on it a little bit, but what is it all about, and what even is a bonsai master?
Oh, I would say a bonsai master in the literature is one who is highly skilled. So I have a bonsai master to whom I go for assistance in my trees. So a bonsai master is a highly skilled individual. So what was the second part of the question, Ryan?
I know, what is the relationship between the bonsai master and the trees? What, give us a taste of what that's like.
Well, if I was to use some words to describe that relationship, it would be one of love, an intimate relationship, and one of total dedication to take the tree on a journey from sapling to a tree that, I mean, of many, many years, so that it becomes in its own way a perfect example of what it is, whether it be a Chinese elm or a fig or a bougainvillea, whatever the tree is. So the relationship is one of total commitment to a specific journey, and it's certainly based on love and respect for what the tree is and the journey it's on, and ultimately where it's going to end.
Excellent. Well, I can definitely already draw some comparisons to leadership just with some of the language you've used to describe that, and of the point as we're developing our leadership skills, we are trying to be all that we can be, and the best expression, I guess you could say, as a human in community.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. So, sounds fascinating. Again, two very different workshops. Both have the tie-in to leadership, but really appreciate you coming on the show to share what you have in store for the convention attendees, and wish you safe travels to the United States, Mark.
Okay, cheers.
Our next guest is leadership expert and author David Dye. David is giving a presentation on Friday, August 25th at 4 p.m. The title is Winning Well, Leading for Transformational Results Without Losing Your Soul. David Dye, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome, David.
Thank you. So glad to be here.
Great to have you with us. And I know, David, you are a Toastmaster as well, as some of our other presenters are. So you'll be bringing that unique experience to the topic here. But give us a thumbnail sketch of what you have in store for us at the International Convention.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when people hear the title Winning Well and Transformational Results Without Losing Your Soul, one of the questions that always comes up is, what are you talking about? Is this a religious program? And no, it's not. When we talk about losing your soul, it's what happens to leaders, particularly in the workplace, but it happens with volunteer leaders as well, where you're caught between the high expectations that your board or your supervisors or the goals of your club, whatever goals you have, those are high goals that need to be achieved. And yet you've got the needs of your people for connection and trust and to be invested in. And without the skills to know how to do that, most leaders, and there's tons of research around this, most leaders end up in a very difficult position, isolated, bitter, burned out. They're doing the best they can, but it's not working, and they get very frustrated. And so with Winning Well, we are providing you the practical tools that you can walk out of the program, get back to your team, whether that's a business team, a volunteer club team, and start getting the results that you want to see. It's a very inspiring, motivating, and yet very practical program.
And David, can you give us some of your backgrounds? What is it that qualifies you to get on the stage, present yourself as a leadership expert, and speak to an audience of Toastmasters?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. So much of what I share with audiences and with managers and leaders all over the world was forged in the fire of real experience. I started my professional career in the nonprofit world, in NGOs, and I was a frontline employee and volunteer at times. And through the process of growing in that environment, realized the need for leadership and management and so forth. But particularly in some of those industries, it's not widespread. People are long on heart, but short on some of the leadership and management tactics and tools and techniques that they need. And so I started researching and investigating and learning those myself. I went to spent thousands of hours in courses and classes and reading every book I could get my hands on with coaches and mentors and everybody that I could get. And in the course of that time, built an organization from a very small single city nonprofit to one that grew and expanded across the United States. And in the process of that, was able to do a lot of coaching and consulting and training of managers and leaders. And so from that passion came the book that my co-author Karen Hurt and I wrote called Winning Well. And really what we are giving you is the textbook that answers the inspiration, motivation that we wish we would have had at various points in our careers, both as frontline leaders all the way to executive leaders. These are the things that we wish somebody would have given us. And so that's what we'll be sharing.
Nice. And David, what kind of presentation can the people expect that go to see your presentation?
Absolutely. It's going to be an interactive keynote. So we'll be sharing some stories and things that are inspirational and motivating, but we'll also be talking with one another and having fun together. Nothing I do or you sitting in your seat the whole time. So the bottom line is that you're going to walk out inspired and ready to get back to your team and make a difference.
Am I going to have to hug my neighbor, David?
I'm so glad you asked that. No, you will not. I'm actually very sensitive to, we have different cultural standards. We have different individual personalities. And so the kind of interaction we do is very much content focused. It's very much about having fun, but it's also safe for everybody to participate with.
Fantastic. David, your presentation description promises tools, tactics, and techniques. And so I want to ask you a question that's maybe going to be a little bit challenging because there's probably a lot of things you'd love to share for this, but can you give us just one? What's one practical tool, tactic, or technique that we can put into practice this week, today even, and see results with?
Sure. One of our favorites is called Ditch the Diaper Drama. And what we're talking about there is if you think of the modern contemporary diaper pail, you put a stinky diaper in and you give it a crank and it wraps that diaper with layers of plastic so it doesn't stink. Well, that's great for diapers, but it's not so good in a team or in an organization. And so we encourage leaders to speak, not sandwich the stink. If there's something that needs to happen, let's solve it. Let's talk about it. And we're going to give you the specific ways to do that. But it starts with the invitation and the willingness, you know what, I need to speak the truth. I'm not going to sandwich it. I'm not going to self-protect. I'm going to share it. And there are healthy ways to do that. So that's one thing we can start working on right away is our willingness to speak and not sandwich the stink.
Sounds good.
I like that. My nose is twitching as you're saying it. Very effective. What else do you want to share with us, David, in the couple moments that we have left here?
You know, the message that I want to share with every leader is that you don't have to struggle in that tension between the need for results and the need for relationships with your people. It is absolutely possible to blend the bottom line results with the human spirit, and that's what we're going to give you the tools to do. So be encouraged, know that it's possible. Come ready to get a few of those practical, inspired leadership tools that are going to help you to transform your results, and you're going to have a fantastic time.
Wonderful. David, thank you so much for being with us. This sounds great.
It's my pleasure.
All right, you take care.
Thanks, David.
You too. You're very welcome. Take care now.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.